message Monday, start again to President.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, good morning, and compliments of the new year. We're here today, some of our faces are familiar and some are not. On my left is the new KG of Public Works, who started on the 15th of January, 2013, and his name is Mr. Mziwonke Zabani. My name is Mandisa Fakela Limbi. As you all know, I was the acting DG. Now I've gone back to my portfolio strategic management. On my extreme left is Mr. Cox Mukhoro. And Mr. Cox Mukhoro is the new chief financial officer. If you recall, you may have seen his face before. He was part of the stabilization team that we brought in, seconded by the IDT. And also, if you recall, we had interviews of the CFO last year, and that post now is permanently filled. And on my right is Mr. Kwazube, and Mr. Kwazube is the acting COO, and probably the DG will touch on this, on the reshuffle in the department, the first phase of the reshuffle that has taken place, and yeah, going forward in terms of how public works will probably look like. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much. Before the presentation, I think we also need to introduce ourselves as members of parliament. I'm Catherine Mabuza, chairing Public Works Portfolio Committee. Can you switch on your system so that you can be audible enough?
Good morning. I am Noma Temba November, a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning. My name is Maggie Masala, a member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Mr. Makubane, a member of this committee. Thank you.
I'm Anshin Dreyer, also a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Mpuwele Swati, member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Sanbonani, Mpumzile Ngwenya Mabila, Lunga Lali Committee.
We are all introduced. Thank you very much for the introduction. On my left is the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, Akona Busakwe. Without any waste of time, I will ask the DG. Honorable Dreyer, I saw your head up. Oh, covered. Thank you very much. Without any waste of time, can we allow the new DG to make his presentation? There are two officials who just came in, Mr. Henderson and Mr. Can you do it? Ario. Yes, my apology, Mr. Ario. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to the members of the honorable members of the committee. As indicated, my name is Mziwonke Labantu. I assumed the position of DG in January, and therefore I would say I am fairly new in the environment. The report that we are taking is a performance report covering both the non-financial as well as the financial performance aspects for the period ended 31 December 2012. I think it is important to note that this performance progress in the department for throughout the financial year. Welcome to the meeting.
Good morning, Deputy Minister, and welcome to the meeting.
Was carried out. The performance was carried out in an environment that is seeking to change and re-establish and reconfigure the department's activities in line with the issues that have been identified, which I think the committee has been grappling with. And some of the things, as reflected in the Auditor General's report, reflecting on performance information, also taking into account. And therefore, I think when we provide our information, it is important that we consider that it is happening in that context. And therefore, in generally, the performance will reflect areas that show some of the difficulties that have been experienced in the process of changing the organization while having to deliver on certain areas. And in that regard, we have, in the presentation themselves, extracted those key critical areas of performance that we will be reporting to the committee. And in the other report that is the actual text for the performance, then they will find a reflection of a much broader coverage of the areas of performance in the department. Before that takes place, I will formally introduce the members of the team that will be participating in this discussion today. Mandisa Fajera Lindi, who has already introduced, who has been acting DG in the department, whom I have actually dubbed the acting DG honorary, which is now a title that I have assigned to her. We also have Mr. Mfezeko Kwazube, acting COO until the end of this month, who's redeployed to deal with professional services and project management. And then Cox Mohoro, who's the CFO. The people who will be doing the presentations in this session, Chair, will be Mandisa Fajera Lindi and Cox Mohoro will be dealing with the financial aspect. I will not be dealing with the details of the presentation itself myself today, but in future I will do so. I think that is the context in which we should look at this. I do know, based on the program of the committee, at critical times we may have to deal with specific projects that relate to certain aspects of the performance, including, for example, progress with the turnaround strategy, which would be a presentation that is on its own, I think, because of the extent to which it is involved. In that regard, Chair, I will ask Mandisa, Ms. Fajera Lindi, to take us through the first part, and then Cox will deal with the financials, and then we'll take questions if the Chair allows.
Thank you very much. Honourable Members, there are three apologies, one from the Minister, Mr. Sithole and Gaila. And I also like to indicate that the new DG did indicate to me yesterday that he won't be presenting. He will allow the officials, other officials to present, and I did agree. Over to you.
Apologize for an early departure. We need to leave at 5:30 from the 11 o'clock meeting. Thank you.
Good morning again, honorable members. I'll just take you through this third quarterly performance report. And building on the second quarterly report and the robust discussion that we had last year around the program or the performance of the Department of Public Works. In terms of the general overview, I'm just going to be stressing certain issues that we have focused on to ensure that the immovable asset register is accelerated. There's been
a focus on this project because we play in catch up in many respects. If you take it back anyway, the catch up to maybe say 1994. But what we have done, the minister and the deputy minister have been engaging provinces. I think that's what I would like to state up front, to actually ensure that the provinces are taken on board and actually the roles are clarified and that the deliverable and the timeline in terms of the immovable asset register are met. So they've been to a number of provinces. In the provinces, what we have done through the minister's intervention with the deputy minister, a framework has been developed to assist provinces to be able to accelerate their own immovable asset register. So that's a priority for MINMEC, starting last year, Chairperson and Honourable Members. There's also in terms of progress, because as you know, we have a service provider who are assisted by Ernst & Young, but there's been some progress in terms of confirmation of properties devolved to provinces and confirmation of properties that belong to public works. In terms of percentage apportionment, at least the confirmation process, as Chairperson, we can confirm is about 80%, and with the intervention, therefore, by both the Minister and the Deputy Minister to ensure that we move with speed beyond the 80%. And also, we have paid attention to the issue of the devolution of rates and budgets, and because we discovered that some of the impact of the immovable asset register, as you know, we have discussed this matter before, is also related to the issue of the rates, of property rates and taxes. We had a special MINMEC whereby we discussed, we invited Treasury, we invited other stakeholders who are affected by the devolution of the property rates and taxes as they impact on the immovable asset register completeness as expected by the by the AG. So we're moving steam ahead with that as well. The reports of that MINMEC are available for the interrogation of the committee, should the committee require the department to do so. We've also paid attention to the issue of the value, the fair value, during this immovable asset register, and we are in touch with the Office of the Accountant General to ensure that there's synergy in all of these interventions. We also, to steam ahead with this immovable asset register, been in touch with the Chief Surveyor General. I've mentioned this last year, Honourable Members. We are going to, the Chief Surveyor General, as you may remember, is working on the state land audit for the country, and the data that is supposed to migrate from rural development to public works to enhance our own immovable asset register. That process, Chairperson, is moving ahead. We also, last year, to assist this project, I made contact with the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense handed over their database because they've already done their immovable asset register. And that asset register, that database, has been uploaded into our system. Now, as a custodian of all immovable assets of the state, as public works, it is important, therefore, that we build relations with these departments, as some of them have delegated custodial roles, as you may know. The overview continues, Chairperson, to touch on lease management. You would recall that in last year, the minister committed himself to, with the Minister of Treasury, to support this lease management. May I then affront say that the process of improving on lease management, on the lease management function of the department, is moving ahead. But I must also acknowledge, Chairperson, that there have been delays because of this project is linked to the turnaround as part of the stabilization in terms of at least from the turnaround program. And also the delays related to it are also, we're waiting for money also from Treasury. As you know that the adjustment process, we had to wait for it and to get the allocation. Because in government, as we all know, we don't spend money that you don't have, otherwise you'll have to account to the AG. So the Lease Advisory Committee is also in the process of being established to make sure that that project of lead management, it goes ahead without any stumbling blocks. You would also recall that the centralization, there's been a centralization of this function at head office, just to manage the risk inherent in the entire lead management portfolio. That continues chairpersoning, but also we have deployed to 11 regional offices across the country to assist with the backlog, because the backlog is there, but at least we're moving with to ensure that we deal with that. Supply chain management. Supply chain management, there's a project plan that we have developed, chairpersoning, and we are managing our progress against that project plan. As I alluded to last year, we have had a secondment from one of our entities to look at the supply chain management and function in the department. I know that there's been frustration, especially around issues of prestige and all of that, and supply chain processes of public works, the bureaucratic processes. We have made major strides, at least, in terms of supply chain management. We have looked at the issue of the supplier register directive and application forms, and also a draft SBM policy that directs the business to understand all the applicable circulars and practice notes issued by National Treasury. We have also undertaken a training for all our BID committee members to go through SBM training, and not just to appoint them within the department and not support them to succeed when they adjudicate tenders. So that's part of enhancing the skills in terms of supply chain management. The building of skills in public works chapter. I would like to confirm that last year we did make a commitment to you and the committee that we are looking at building skills internally in the department. But we also had to wait for money from Treasury, because in terms of the current compensation budget, it's already overstretched. So we had to put the building of skills in public works as part of the turnaround. May I also share with you that we have developed a 7-year plan for public works for this turnaround, which was a requirement from Treasury, but at least there is commitment that the intervention itself is not a once-off, it's going to take time over a period of time. Treasury granted us a budget, Jefferson, after we have made our own assessment of we need 220 professionals to be in the department. So Treasury funded about 40% of that, at least in terms of this current fiscal year, what's ending in March. But what we have done also to ensure that we move with speed on this one, given the holidays in between, we have sought the assistance of the Council for Built Environment that will assist with the recruitment process, and also ensure that we get, when we release the advert, at least we get people as soon as possible. But also, we, as public works, we manage water plants across the country. This is a project linked to the EPWP. And we currently doing an assessment. We're looking at getting about 100 plus technicians, artisans from the water plants who will be absorbed into the structure of public works. So this issue of professionals is not only reliant on the 40% that is currently funded by Treasury, but it will also be augmented by the 100 plus 100 more technicians, artisans that are coming into the department to assist the reopening of workshops. The last year, Chairperson, we shared with you that we have costed this, it's done, it's a proposal. We've appealed to Treasury to actually fund this. If you recall, the figure was 500 million. We're going to prioritize Pretoria and Cape Town for obvious reasons, and we hope that. But we also want the committee to be mindful of the fact that just to
for lack of a better word, piloting the reopening of these workshops in two regions will increase our establishment by 40%. Now, everything that we do is always reliant on money. And may I also mention up front that in terms of the next MTF period, Treasury has reduced our budget by almost $1 billion. Next year, it will be taking up about $350 million. But the CFO will talk to that. Program analysis. I'm sorry, I forgot to move the screen. I'm sorry for that. Internal audit and investigations, chapter 7. I'm just going to focus on the highlights, but I think it's important that we're working with Treasury, who has given us a director to be seconded to that unit. And also, from the turnaround budget, the unit has been able to access $10 million for investigations. But obviously, because the money came in October, there are processes in place. There were processes that we had to embark on to recruit some companies from outside to assist the internal audit. I know that this is an area that the committee and the AG has expressed concern, but with the commitment from Treasury to provide some budget, that process is going on. There's been a lot of investigations that the internal audit unit had to do, and it's been a challenging factor because the directorate responsible for investigations has been struggling to retain people for various reasons, because it's a sensitive area, and also people are always mobile. But with the commitment of that $10 million, we've decided that it's of no use to cry over the high turnover. We can balance the high turnover by mitigating a risk by making internal audit a turnaround project and make sure that there is money to conduct investigations, and we can rope in or source in some companies to assist internal audit with the work that it has to do. And there's also been an independent review of management action plans to ensure that at least there's some effectiveness and improvement. The last bullet, Chairperson, speaks to the issue that internal audit the anti-fraud and corruption awareness campaign is also being funded through the turnaround. If you move to HRM, the vacancy rate of public works chaplains, given all the challenges that we have, it's also subjected to some form of fluctuation. We are standing at 15%, and the detail of that is provided in the column. But I must also, chaplains, stress that in terms of gender equity in the department, we're not doing very bad. If you look at that 44.59%, and also we do have a retention policy, but that retention policy had to be reviewed, and we've been using what we have to at least make counter offers for people not to leave public works while we are building the capacity. But also with all of these, we're also reviewing the HR plan. And also the employment equity policy is also being attended to. But I just want to mention one thing as we look at the statistics, that Public Works has embarked on a structural review process to ensure that the structural misalignment is corrected. And in terms of corrective measures, honorable members, we are going to introduce in the department the DDG internal audit and risk management. We already have appointed a chairperson and honorable members, a deputy CFO, to look specifically at the PMTE while we are working on the policy process of what kind of this trading entity or trading account the department is going to be. So as to alleviate the pressure from the CFO, because that PMTE is huge on its own and does need adequate support to make sure that the department at least alleviate the pressure of negative audits. We're also looking at
getting a DDG SCM chairperson. The reason is very simple. Public Works, in the deliberations that the minister has had with his counterparts, it cannot just be treated as just another department. Public Works is a tender department. It has not a nice title, but there's recognition here to say we need to ensure that even though in government the position of finance and SCM are linked, but Public Works must be accorded a special status while it's still turning around to ensure that we focus on SCM. You would recall that most of the findings of the AG, if you drill them down, they come to finance and SCM in particular. We also chairperson and honorable members looking at bringing in a DDG property management. We are a property management business, and that's why we have created the post of a deputy CFO, and we've never had a DDG property management. We should be assisting us with the leases and everything else related to that. Chairperson, if you look at slide number 10, we're just here disclosing the issue of grievances, because if you look at the annual report, it's important for us to share the statistics with Parliament, misconduct and disputes that have been resolved over this period. When it comes to intergovernmental relations, Chairperson, the issue is just to communicate to the members that we do have regular min-max and HOD forums, and as a public works family, we are dealing with the issues facing public works as a function across the two levels of government with the same figure. On program two, asset investment analysis, Chairperson, I just want to, on bullet number one, to say that the deeds have not been reviewed, but there's just been a deed reconciliation. It was just a matter of grammatical error there that in terms of that the asset investment unit has assisted with the reconciliation of the deed. And also, as I alluded to before, at the beginning of this project, we have actually, we are in touch with the Chief Surveyor General. We have also completed that test desktop review, as alluded before. The issue of the land parcels is very important for the honorable members to pay attention to that statistic. It is very, very critical for the immovable asset register, but also general in terms of immovable asset ownership in the country. And also the custodian asset management plan. It is also very important that we communicate to the committee progress regarding that. And you would see that in terms of that, the Department of Public Works is actually the progress reported against the quarterly target, Chairperson, is 54%. If you look at the last column, the importance of highlighting that revenue stream is related to the fact that before, although if you look at the last column, we're talking about 35,481,000 vis-a-vis, if you look at the annual target that we've set ourselves, is 1.6 billion. And also a quarterly target of 410 million by quarter three. If you look at the revenue stream on the last column and you compare it with, it may look minimal, Chairperson, but it's disclosed for purposes of transparency so that the committee is assured that we are working hard to ensure that we collect the revenue from our various partners who owe us rent. Inner city regeneration. We have had presentations in front of this committee about this intervention, and we have also disclosed that way back we have had feasibility studies. But this project is now, we're working very closely with the city of Tshwane to ensure that we you move ahead with the inner city generation program. What I would like to highlight there, if you look at bullet number 3, the city of Swat, the issue of land, compiling land availability document is critical because that is for sites for various government departments in honor of that cabinet decision to keep government departments in the city of Swat. And then in terms of infrastructure projects related to inner city regeneration, honorable members, you would, the fourth bullet, there seeks to explain that the projects that are aligned to that program have at least entered the funding stream of public works. We have also before spoken about Salvocorp, and Salvocorp is one of the targeted geographical areas in Pretoria for accommodating other government departments. EPWP. In terms of the quota 3 target, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, 2,500, that was the target to participate in NYS, and the actual progress against that is 1,366. If you look at the second one, we were targeting 200 municipalities to report an EPWP target, and now we have 202 municipalities who have reported on EPWP target. For the work opportunities, Chairperson, the target was to create 800,000 work opportunities. We're still trying to get the data so that we communicate the quarter 3 data. You would appreciate that there's always this time lag when we deal with the EPWP because they have to deal with statistics from the municipality, provinces, and national. So we put that in red so that there's general understanding that we're holding back on the actual progress subject to a verification process underway. In terms of the next project of the EPWP, the Provincial Roads Project, we have created 100,000 work opportunities. The quarterly target, sorry, is 100,000. And the actual progress is 107,714. But also to caution the committee that the number may change because we're also still busy with the verification process on that. Then there's the issue of the incentive grants. The quarterly target was 55%, and the actual progress 74%. The incentive grant for provincial departments, it was 65%, and the actual progress against the target, 96%. That would deal with program 3. Program 4, construction and property policy regulation. It's important that we emphasize here three critical issues, Chairperson. The expropriation bill is in the cabinet process, and the DM who's leading that process, fortunately, is here. But what's important is an assurance that we want to give to the committee that it is indeed in the cabinet process. I know that there's been many questions on the draft bill, the environment policy, and unfortunately, that seems to be taking longer than we would have wanted. That's a built environment profession bill. Agrimo, I know that as committee members, we would like to see that Agrimo South Africa is a standalone and not located within the CSIR. We're also trying to accelerate that process to make sure that the Agrimo South Africa bill is expedited to be completed. In terms of the policy frameworks, those are also still in the pipeline. but policy issues, they normally take longer to actually finalize chapters. But we have not done very well in this area, generally. But it's important for me to mention that there's a process that the minister and the deputy minister are leading to ensure that there's turnaround in terms of that function in the department. Chairperson, I'll hand over then to the CFO to proceed with the financial statement. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just speak, because I think that's what I've been invited to speak on the legislation. The bad news is that we're not going to meet those quarterly targets. Clearly, we haven't met them in terms of tabling the two pieces of legislation. The good news, however, is that we are making progress. In regard to the expropriation bill, it will serve before cabinet committee, not next week, but the following week. So it's been signed off by the minister. We've outlined the general principles to a MINMEC meeting last year and received support for the general direction in which we're travelling from all of the MECs, so underlined also from our colleague in Western Cape, MEC Carlisle, who supported the broad thrust of what we're doing. Obviously, he didn't see the detailed text. That would only become available. Once the bill has been signed off by Cabinet, which will happen in the next few weeks, hopefully, I'm fairly confident it will, it will need to go to NEDLAC. So it will be published in the Government Gazette for public comment, and the public comment process will also include a NEDLAC process. What we would like to do, Chairperson, with your permission, is nonetheless at the public comment stage, table it here in the committee just for information, basically. It wouldn't be for processing and for hearings, for parliamentary hearings on the bill. Of course, we can't do that until the NEDLAC process is completed in the case of this particular legislation. We're very anxious to get it to the committee as soon as we can, but we think that the realistic perspective is in the second half of the year. If we miss the second half of the year, we will miss this Parliament, basically, because I think next year Parliament will have a SONA, a budget, and very little legislation, as we obviously focus on elections in 2014. So it's very important, and we are identifying this as a priority. And as I say, it's for the parties in the portfolio committee to assess the merits of other ones of the bill. But really what we're trying to do is we're sitting with an old 1970s expropriation act, which is completely out of line with the Constitution. And so we're trying to produce a non-controversial piece of legislation, but which aligns expropriation to what's contained in the Constitution, not least the property clause in the Bill of Rights. So that's what we're trying to do with that. The other piece of legislation is the Agrimark South Africa Bill. There the delay was caused by the Deputy Minister, because we just wanted to make sure that there was pressure from Treasury to set up Agrimark as an independent entity, because there are problems with the funding flow to Agrimark SA. However, at a cabinet level, there's a concern that we're setting up lots and lots of independent entities. And, of course, that was what also that commission headed by Pierre was also telling us, that there's a multiplication of government entities. So we asked the policy program within the department just to really, notwithstanding the pressure from Treasury, do we really want to set up another entity? I think that after discussion with the colleagues in Agrimark, say with the board of Agrimark South Africa, and discussion amongst ourselves, we've come to the conclusion that it is correct. It is an entity in all but law, basically. And so it's a question not of setting up some new entity so much as giving it proper legal status so that we can set it up. So unfortunately, that, requesting just to think three times about what we were doing. And we have been persuaded. So it wasn't the department, but the politicians, and particularly the deputy minister, who was responsible for the delay, for which we apologize, but we thought it was important to do that. So again, we hope the legislation is being drafted, again, realistically, I think we're looking at the second half of this year. Perhaps we can speed it up beyond that. This won't involve a NEDLAC process, and so it won't involve those complications. Obviously, like any other draft legislation, it would need to go for public comment. So we might be able to make it in the first half of this year, but perhaps the more realistic perspective is the second half of the year. But again, it is important to regularize the status of agri, I would say, and to build it actually into an entity, to a more forceful and prominent entity in the public space. Chairperson, I hope that explains where we are and our concern that we are moving slowly, and we do want to move as quickly as we can, and we want to give you lots of work to do in terms of dealing with legislation. So we're anxious to do that.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Are we engaging? Why not engaging in the discussion?
I just wanted to ask a question in terms of process. Can we ask questions now about this part of the presentation before we go on to the financials?
I would like the committee to direct me. Do you want us to engage with the presentation or continue, Honourable Members? Yes, Madam Robert.
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe it will be proper because the Honourable Deputy Minister requested to leave before we finish. Maybe
over to you, Honourable Member. Honourable Drea.
Thank you, ma'am.
Followed by Madopa and Guayamavila. And no one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, mine is a couple of questions, but all related to basic clarity. On the sixth page of that slide, reopening of workshops, the previous acting DG mentioned that about 100 technicians from water plants, the various water plants, would be transferred to Department of Public Works. And while we need the skills in public works, we also need them in the water plants. As we all know, many of the water plants are in great problems. So aren't we not just shifting a problem from one place to another place? Shouldn't we be looking at employing additional technicians from wherever they are, even retired people, just to come and help out while we're growing our own timber? So the question is about taking them away from the water plants. The second one, on HRM, that's slide 9, the previous acting DG mentioned that the EE policy is being consulted by inviting inputs, the same with the RH plan is in a consultation process. Just want to get more information about that. What is the aim of consulting this? Do you want to change it? If so, in what direction, and so on. So what is the aim of inviting all these consultations? Where do we want to go? Do we want to change it? The next question, page 16, or the 16th slide, expanded public works program. It says there in the annual target on the third row, create 1,210,000 work opportunities. Now, I'd just like a definition of work opportunities. How many people are we talking about are involved in? Because sometimes a work opportunity may last for 3 weeks. And then sometime later on, there's another work opportunity lasting 2 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever the case may be, but it's the same person being employed consecutively with maybe short intermissions. So how are we defining work opportunities and how many people, actual people, are involved? And what is the duration of such a job opportunity? And the last question is on slide 18, referring to construction property policy regulation. Now, my questions have all been answered there by the Deputy Minister when he talked about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Madopa?
I want to check the issue of the Lease Advisory Committee. Is it going to be a permanent committee or it will assist to fast track the backlog as it is indicated on the presentation. If it's not permanent, how long are they going to be there? Because they have indicated the backlog and then also the advisory to deal with the new, old, and then there's one on month-to-month thing. The other question, Chair, is the issue of the training, because the issue of the SCM policy and the supply chain as a whole, it's a challenge in the department. Was the training of these regional SCM coordinators and officials done in all the provinces or regions? And if yes, how many coordinators were trained and the staff to really focus, because it's where the department has been heading for challenges. And on the issue of the decline of the investigation, I want to check whether it is it because of the budget or it is because of the staff, as the honorary DG was indicating, I'm told. Is it a staff challenge or it's a budget? And then is it only the decline in the internal investigations, or is it affecting also the external investigations that are not going to continue? On the issue of policy, Honorable Deputy Minister, we appreciate to see that there is something that is taking place. However, Chair, we are having a concern as a committee on the issue of the bills or legislations that are supposed to be enacted by the department, that seemingly even the issue of the policy, you can talk to the report of the Auditor General, worried about the systems that are not in place, draft, and so on. And we are wondering as a committee, what is this unit of the policy doing actually? It's a concern. In 2011, they presented the to say that the CP bill will be in place, the expropriation bill in 2011. Till now, as we are coming, Honorable Deputy Minister and the Minister, fast-tracking this thing, really would want to know what is this unit actually doing, because it's a concern on the issue of policies and systems. They are always drafted and so on, which made it difficult for managing the frauds that are taking place, because there are no policies that are in place or systems that are guiding and assisting the staff not to have the challenges. At the moment, Honorable Chair, I will pause there and then I will come later if there is an opportunity.
Honorable Mwanyamavila.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation and also...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
All right. Go on. Okay, thanks, Honorable Swart. The presentation and also the progress that is being made by the department with regard to the asset register. We hope and believe that at the end of the day, this will be the problem of the past, because it keeps on coming when looking at the AG's report. But Chair, on the advisory committee, I would like just to find out what will be the composition of this committee, and also the just brief terms of reference of the committee, to top up on what my colleagues have just said. On the issue of the SCM, you mentioned that the training has been provided to coordinators, but with regard to the SCM, lack of skill was one of the challenges, but the major challenge was just fraud and corruption in that unit. But the report is just quiet about that. What plans are you putting in place to deal with fraud and corruption at the SCM level? Then, about the 220 professionals, I understand that the Treasury has given you some money to appoint 100 of them, but my worry is that looking at the time frame, it's February now. Are you sure that you're going to be able to appoint the 100 people that you're supposed to appoint before the end of the financial year? Because failing which, you have to surrender the money back to Treasury, meaning that the problem will remain if we fail to spend the money before the end of the financial year. what place are put in place to fast track and to make sure that you recruit those people before the end of the financial year. I heard the presenter saying that there's progress with regards to women in the SMF position, but I want to emphasize that there's a need for improvement with regards to that. And also when looking at the people with disability, and this, I think the Employment Equity Act has been passed more than 10 years now. But, you know, if we're failing just to meet the 2% of people with disabilities, then it means that we've got a challenge. With regards to the Employment Equity Plan and also the HR plan, were these the new policies or were we were reviewing the existing policies? Because it seems as if there were no policies in place. These are the new policies. These are the new policies. The last one, Chair, is on the issue of the, you know, discrepancies, cases of misconduct, the disputes, which are taking long to be finalized. It's a major concern. And also, just to get an indication, because here I think there are cases of financial misconduct. Were those cases reported to the Public Service Commission and also to the Auditor General? And also, what lessons has the department put in place to make sure that all these suspension cases are being finalized? Because we're paying people money, people who are sitting at home, sitting for a period of a year to 2 years, then keep on paying them while the cases are not being finalized. I think that's regarded as a wasteful and fruitless expenditure. Then the other one is just, you know, when you use these acronyms, I think there's a need for the footnotes, because in some instances you read the whole page but you can't get to the meaning of that of the acronym that has been used in a particular page. On EPWP, your annual target was 260. I think it is 200 municipalities report on EPWP. But Chair, just for noting and for future consideration, because the department indicated to the committee that there's improvement with regards to reporting. They've addressed that particular problem. So we didn't experience any challenge with regards to reporting, because they told us about the data capturers which have been deployed in various areas to assist the municipalities, and also the trainings that we're conducting to make sure that this problem becomes a problem of the past. So we hope that in the next report municipalities will all be able to report on the progress with regards to EPWP projects. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. My first question is with regard to this advisory committee, which, according to me, is very important. So I just want to know the time frame, because here it is only saying that it's talking of the establishment. So I just want to know the time frame so that it can start working. I just want to know when they're going to start. Another question is with regard to the capacity building and reduction of vacancies. It is saying that about 220 professionals have been identified to assist, but only 100 have been approved. So I just want to know what will happen to 120. Are they not going to cause a problem with regard to actually helping the department to move forward? Another is with regard to the opening of the workshop. It was actually suggested, it is actually reported that the phase one is going to be in Cape Town and Pretoria. I just want to know if the phase one means that this financial year or next financial year, if they're only going to only focus on the phase one of the two cities, or are they going to expand in the next phase? Or when they talk of a phase, they're talking of a financial year, or they only talking of a budget? I just want them also to us to understand, because I think this workshop is very important, not only in Pretoria and Cape Town, but also in other provinces. And with regard to the participation of the National Youth Service, in terms of the annual target is 3,500 to participate, but only 1,366 learners participated in the National Youth Service. So I just want to know why, because I think the unemployment rate amongst the young people is very high, and why is this not actually considered when they actually make these people to participate? And with regard to the issue of municipality, my colleague has just said, but I just want to elaborate further, to ask further question. With regard to this, it is only out of 260 municipalities to report to EPWP target. Only 220 municipalities reported on EPW target. So I just want to know what happened to the 58 municipalities, or what step is the department going to take to make sure that all these people get this municipality report. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. My first comment is around on slide number 10, around the misconduct cases. Really, I think we need to get a proper report here. I mean, we had 76 grievances, misconduct 7. Where are these people? Are they behind the bars, or what is happening to them? Or we keep on paying them? That's my first comment. My second one is around the policy. I fully agree with my colleague who says the policy unit is really not assisting us. For instance, we made mention of the expropriation bill. It's very clear that the new expropriation bill will be tabled in Parliament by the 31st of March. And then the other one, the ACRIMA SA bill, also by. But this CBE bill, really, we've been talking about it, and it's like a by-the-way bill. And also because I was here when it was tabled and we did a public hearing, we've got a very serious problem in South Africa. We're saying we don't have engineers, we're not having the professionals, and yet we do have them. But there is a stumbling block. There is a bottleneck somewhere. They are not assisting us. Lastly, it's about the Yama. It's not even mentioned here. The Government Immovable Asset Management Act, that was passed in 2007. And we were told by then that within 2 years, actually it was passed at national and provincial level. And then we were told that by within 2 years it will be implemented at local level. And I think it's one of the reasons why we don't have we don't know the assets at local level. We don't know whether it's those assets they belong to the local government or to most of the assets. And also the DIS office, I don't think it's assisting us that much, because if the DIS office has got the records of all these assets, we would be struggling so much about the assets. I'm trying to emphasize the point that the previous policy unit really did not assist us about the policies that was the bills that were supposed to be passed and all that.
Thank you,
Chairperson, mine is on slide number 13, asset investment analysis. When you look at the increased revenue, the output, you see there that the third quarter it's 410,000, but then the annual progress against is 35,000. Now,
it's clear that it's far from the target. Now I would like to know the strategy to be used by the department to meet that amount which is registered on the third quarter. Again, Chairperson, I want to emphasize on the policy unit that it is clear that those bills, we are not going to deal with those bills. Those bills are not going to be with us, the current committee. Why I'm saying this is because very soon they'll be saying election campaign is starting. And obviously, next year we are not going to go into details doing our work as parliamentarians. So to me, it is clear that the new committee, which is going to start 2014, mid-2014, is going to look into those bills. So I'm pleading to the Deputy Minister that he must assist us fast-tracking those bills, because those bills are very, very important. We have been making noise on this since we started. Now we're finishing up. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honourable November.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Mama Ndala said something on the asset business. But my main worry is that really we're not moving with our asset register. We'll start, and sometime when I joined this committee, there was something like, it was said there's a machine that you can touch on, then you see all assets. But I don't know whether that was true or not, because nothing is happening. Up to thus far, I don't see anything, I don't hear anything. So we need really to move with speed, and also not say too much or make too many promises. Just a little bit, but we also need to have time frames in all and what you are doing. Chairperson, on page 9, I'm sure my English is upside down, maybe. On the HRM, performance indicator, and then the second one, say annual target. Now, the reading for me, vacancy rate is reduced to
50%.
Thank you, Mommy. Vacancy rate is reduced to 15% as at 31st March. Is that right? It didn't sound right to me. I know that it is our time, but as at 31st, that's why I'm saying you need to listen to something about upside down. Chairperson, yeah, let me stop there. Everything has been said by the other comrades.
Majoba, just a second.
Yes. No, just a simple one, Chair. I want to check on the issue of the information, the Department of Trade, State Land Audit. And they have also indicated that some of the information, they got it through the desktop. And the desktop, according to me, is not reliable, because it will just indicate, but when you go to the actual, you'll find that maybe the land was sold and so on. But lastly, Chair, on the issue of the representation in the organogram, 44.59%, I want to check, Chair, because there is employment equity plan in each and every department, I assume. Is it calculated per level, or it is calculated just number of women maybe at a lower level? Because if it is not calculated at each level of the organogram, it may be misleading. You'll find that in the key position, you won't find the women. I want to check, how do they deal with this employment equity plan in the department? Do they zoom per level, or they just calculate the sweepers and say the women are 44%? Thanks.
And Deputy Minister, before leaving, would you like to say a comment? Yes.
Thanks for the opportunity. The two areas obviously I'd like to comment on. The one would be, maybe to begin with, the point that Honourable Dreyer raised around the expanded public works. And what are we measuring? What are we talking about when we talk about work opportunities? And then I'll deal a little bit with the maligned policy unit in the department. I think the Honourable Gray is asking a very good question, and I think she's absolutely right to do so. As it stands, this is our principal measure, and that's why in this quarterly report we are reflecting on job opportunities. So the targets are primarily job opportunity targets, and that's what we're reporting on, and I think appropriately so. But I think that as we must ask the question, what actually are we measuring when we're measuring these job opportunities? I think that's, and so we can't blame the reporters for reporting in terms of the targets that have been set. But I think we need to stop putting pressure on ourselves to say, shouldn't we be measuring something else? Now, we do measure full-time equivalent. In other words, we try also then to work out duration of work, the duration of the work opportunities, because very often it is just 2 or 3 weeks. Typically, I think what varies from whether it's infrastructure or the social sector or whatever, but they're often of very short duration, but some are quite long duration, so it varies enormously. And so job opportunities, first of all, doesn't give us a good indication of the quality and impact of what we're achieving. And I think that probably dates back to the original rationale when we began the Expanded Public Works Program. We thought it was a very short-term intervention, that we had a sort of temporary unemployment crisis, and this was a temporary measure. What the National Development Plan, amongst other things, is telling us is that by 2030 we must have expanded the program, not run it down, because the structural problems of unemployment that we've, not least as Honourable Swati mentioned, amongst youth, but not just amongst youth, these are deeply embedded structural problems that we're confronting in South Africa, and therefore the Expanded Public Works Program and the Community Works Program are programs that are of long, you know, that we need to be thinking of as long-term strategic interventions. They're not the solution total, they're not the silver bullet that solves all our unemployment problems, but they're a very important contribution. And therefore, I think increasingly what we need to be measuring is full-time equivalent, but even more importantly, what is happening to the participants? Are they acquiring any skills in the process? Is there a skills transfer process? Is there, in some cases, we are starting to see interesting, within the Expanded Public Works Program itself, gradations, so that people, you know, that there's career opportunities, even this career progression, even within an Expanded Works Program itself. In the Working for Water Program, there's the basic cutting down of aliens, but then there's the acquisition of skills in terms of eco furniture and so forth, using the products. And those are all part. So those are interesting developments, which don't come through in the raw statistics that we're measuring. But then also importantly, we need to start planning, you know, are we just digging holes and then filling them up again in order to kind of employ people? Or is there a genuine contribution to the gross domestic product in terms of what we're doing through these programs? Because these, by the way, the size of the numbers of participants in South Africa in these public works programs is unprecedented globally, actually, currently. We're running huge schemes, and that's impressive. It's offering some dignity of some kind of work, some experience of discipline of work and so on to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. But it's not just that. I mean, I think some indications, and again, because I've just been interacting with the colleagues involved in the environmental sector, they think that by clearing aliens out of water courses and so on, we're probably contributing to the GDP, where we're not measuring it, hundreds of billions of rand, basically, of savings through improving ecosystems and their reproducibility. So we're not measuring. Because I'm excited by this area, and I think it's a really important area, and I think the question that Honourable Jay is asking is a question that leads us into a much wider horizon of things. And therefore, I think we do need to start, and I've been saying it to the colleagues in the department, who are doing a good job, by the way, the Expanded Public Works Program, that let's be more ambitious, let's be more creative, let's be more developmental in our understanding and approach to what it is we're measuring, and therefore what we're trying to achieve. So it's not just pushing people through a program and counting heads, and regardless if it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and so on. So thank you for the question. I think it's a really correct question. For the moment,
these are the reporting requirements that we're reporting on them. But very important questions, so thank you for that. Just on the policy unit, I know this committee has got to really dislike the policy unit. Let me just in mitigation say, I think there are subjective weaknesses and challenges there, which we've identified as a department. But I think, let me also say in mitigation a couple of things. The first thing is that policy is particularly the space in which ministers and deputy ministers play. Okay. And this department is a department that's had, we're talking about turnaround strategies, but there's a huge turnaround of ministers and deputy ministers. And so I think whenever you get, including, and I've already mentioned the Agrimark case, you get a new minister or deputy minister coming in, and then they start to play in the policy space, and they send different signals, and they ask different questions, and so on. And that's our job. But it does mean that it can be particularly disruptive of a policy unit. And I think that's part of the problem. So, you know, one minister tells them to do this or to do that, and then the minister comes and goes, and there's a new minister, and then they're either not getting any guidance, and they're neglected, or they're getting guidance, but the guidance says, hang on, let's rethink that. So I just want to say that in mitigation, and I mentioned the Agrimark case where I said, hang on, hold on the Agrimark bill, because let's just think what we're trying to do. The same applies to the CDE legislation, because they've been coming to you, telling you that we're going to have this Council for the Built Environment legislation, and we're in that policy space. Now, both the minister and myself have said, now, let's just stop. Sorry about this, and sorry to cause disruption, but it's our responsibility to think strategically and with responsibility. The first question we asked is there anywhere in the world where there's an equivalent council? And we've not had a clear answer, so there might be, but we suspect there might not be. Because when in the Council for Built Environment, what you're dealing with is a very wide range of professions. Engineers, architects, landscapers, quantity surveyors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that as a department of public works, and therefore as a portfolio of public works, the regulation of the sector is very important. Policy and regulation is very important. But is it best to try to achieve that regulation and policy development mediated through an intermediary council, or should we not be answering the very question that one of the members asked? There's a massive, there's bottlenecks in producing engineers, qualified engineers. Now, should we as a ministry, as a department, and therefore as a portfolio committee, be dealing with engineers via a council that includes a whole lot of very different professions, all in the built environment thing, or should we be dealing directly as a portfolio committee and as ministry and as the department, directly with the engineering council, directly with the architectural council? So what happens is that we think that the mediation means that they're looking for commonality, or the bigger councils drown out the smaller councils in the process, and so on. And so that's why there's been a delay on this front. We've actually said to the policy unit, we know that you were under instructions to try to think policy-wise and legislation-wise about the CDE. But before we go there, let's just step back a little bit. We know this is frustrating because you want to deal with legislation and policy and keep promising and so on. But we're saying, let's think two and three times about what we're trying to achieve with the Council for Built Environment, and would it not be best to have a more direct relationship with the engineering council, with the architects and so on. So that because each of them are quite different, and we need to respect their professional understanding and qualification, but at the same time exercise our public responsibility to make sure that there's not gatekeeping, as there might be, and all the things that tend to happen in these professions. But at the same time, not pretend that as politicians, as a deputy minister, I know more about engineering, so certainly don't, or architecture than they do. But it's my public responsibility. But can it be easier, if it's not my view, not to be mediated through a CDE, but have a more direct relationship? So hence the delay. So let's not blame the policy unit colleagues. Blame them for things where they're weak or misguided, but I think also try to understand. So I'm not denying that there are subjective challenges there, and we are seeking to deal with them, but I thought also maybe just to contextualize a little bit better. So I hope, Chairperson, that one is contextualized some of the frustrations you've been feeling, and you should be blaming maybe the Deputy Minister more than the portfolio. present judgment. Don't promise that you won't. But hopefully that gives some context for at least some of the data. We really must try to expropriation bill and the agri-market, they must come to Parliament this year. But you see, we can try this as Minister Deputy said to fast track it through NASDAQ, but it's a little bit out of our control. So we are fast tracking it into cabinet in the next few weeks. And hopefully we think we'll get the support of our cabinet colleagues. But then it's into the NEDLAC space. And we're doing what we can to encourage NEDLAC also not to sit on it forever. But it's not entirely it's not in our control that particular process. But we will certainly pay a lot of attention to NEDLAC to try and assist a process. And as I keep saying, our intention is not to produce some kind of an uncontroversial but important piece of legislation when it comes to expropriation. It can easily become emotional. It's not our intention to be controversial in this one. It's to ensure that the Constitution is given in terms of expropriation and the ability of government in all spheres, including provincial government in the Western Cape, to be able to expropriate for public purpose or in a public interest as guided by the property clause. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. DG?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I note that there were a number of questions that I asked in terms of certain categories of issues. I'm going to assign Ms. Fakela Lindy to deal with the HR issues, and any of the other issues that may not be covered in the other categories. And Mr. Kwazulu will deal with all the issues that relate to the professionals, and the issues of the workshops in Cape Town, Pretoria, the 220 professionals, etc. I think there were various questions that were asked that relate to those issues. I presume that he will be able to deal with all of them in a contextual manner. Then I think the Deputy Minister did address the major issues on the EPWO, but if the DDG and the Chief Director present there, who joined us during the presentation, have anything that has not been covered specifically relating to those questions, I will give them the opportunity to indicate as such. Then I will deal with the rest of the issues if not covered. Thanks. Ms. Fajel?
Thanks, DG. Chair, honourable members. The question that dealt with the issue of water plants, maybe I just need to give a background. The Department of Public Works is also a water management authority. I hope I'm correct on that one, in that we manage water treatment plants. We manage them for various facilities that are off-grid. Those would be military bases, those would be correctional services facility, etc. They also provide an essential service for other communities and towns and villages that are on the peripheries of those particular facilities that are not on grid, and we provide water to those communities. Now, the reason I'm providing that particular context is so that we have an understanding when we're saying we want to augment those 220 posts that we have with the formally introducing those people who were part of the EPWP program working on the water plants. So we're not transferring the problem. We're formalizing them in public works. We are potentially facing the risk that we will lose those particular trained people who are currently operating those water plants because they were on contract, not part of the formalized structure of the department. So that is what we're working with. On the question of the 220 posts that we are referring to in the presentation, these are posts that are in the structure, in the approved structure, but were not funded. When the department put together the kickstart plan for the turnaround, it made a commitment to say we can fill 40% of those 220 posts, which equates to around 88. So the question then goes and says, what are our plans in terms of making sure we meet the deadline? What has been achieved, I think, becomes the most important thing, and where are we, and so forth. We are facing about 6 weeks till the end of the financial year, and we have to meet the target of making commitments to commit 40% of those particular posts. I've spoken about the water management technicians, artisans, and professionals that we will be trying to convert into permanent positions within the department. That is one element of bringing them in to meet that particular target. The second element speaks to what has been achieved with regards to those 220 posts that already exist in the structure. One, we got funding from National Treasury as part of the turnaround. That's the first achievement. Two, CBE has agreed to assist us in the recruitment process. What does that mean? They've got access to the direct target market we're looking for, and that is the access to the voluntary associations through the professional councils that they are actually meant to manage in the regulation process. So that is what they've agreed to assist us in the recruitment process. Are we where we wanted to be in terms of our plans? No, we are not. We were supposed by now, we already have appointed the selection panels. By now, we're supposed to have gone through the databases that we have as a result of the call of the previous minister and this current minister of people to submit to public works and to match those posts that are currently in the structure against the people who have applied so that we can ask them to, we can regularize the process of their applications into the department so we can have those technical skills. On the opening of the workshops, when? Committee members must remember that we were going through the process now of doing a feasibility study of the opening of the workshops through this current financial year. We have concluded on that particular document. It is now being reviewed by management for final approval and obviously going to minister. By implication, it means it will require funding, it will require a change in the structure because you need to get approved structures post. There are two levels of now interdepartmental relations that needs to happen. That means, firstly, internally, we must approve a structure for those workshops. Two, it must go to DPSA for formal approval. The other side of it is we need to, part of the government planning cycle, to enter the space of asking for funds to fund that particular mandate. We can't do it if it's not funded. So obviously, the planning cycle starts and says, in the next financial year, we need to make our full submission once all the boxes have been ticked for that particular process. However, we need to note, when things do become priorities, we have the leeway to prioritize that, and that is the prerogative of the accounting officer. And the accounting officer can go back to the adjustment estimate process to ask for reallocations of funds. And we will engage the DG in that regard to ask for the pushing, so we start now, and we don't have necessarily to wait for the outer financial year of 2014-15. I think, DG, I've covered the questions relating to the post and the technical aspects. On the asset register, what was the question? Just remind me, I can answer it.
The question on the revenue collection.
Revenue. That revenue thing.
The revenue I'll answer.
Yeah. Okay.
So the register.
Answer that too.
The question on the on. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The question around the strategy of the department in terms of the collection of revenue. There is a slide that I'm going to deal with it in with that matter in the presentation that I'll be doing. As in our interventions with respect to that.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. On the issue of the
The one honorable member raised the issue of the desktop analysis and its reliability. I think that's a fair question. And that is why we've taken the liberty to actually make sure that this immovable asset register, Shepperson, is not only driven through the HOD and the NIMMEC forum, but it's also at a level of, there's a forum that deals with all GIAMA issues. That means, that is constituted by the provinces. Provincial Public Works and National Public Works. So it's also to ensure that there is synergy between what we are doing and also what the provinces are doing. But also there was a question around the machine that was supposed to go into the verification. As you will recall, honorable members, we have Ernst & Young working on this, but also we had to issue a tender to appoint a service provider to deal with that verification process. So that deals with the issue, Chairperson and honorable members, of us having promised to have that. It delayed, of course. It was, we had hoped it would have started by now, but that process is also underway, and we should be able to report on the affirmative in the fourth quarter of our report. On the issue of the lease advisory committee, we're going to, obviously, it's about establishing a proper functioning, is to have a proper functioning, a lease management that is properly functioning in the department. You would recall previously that we have mentioned that you can't run a 3 billion rand lease business without the requisite skills. So that lease advisory committee, honorable members, we're hoping that we'll be able to recruit, it will be able to be, constituted of property economists and property lawyers, and obviously various functionaries in the department, because if it does not, then we will still, the service provider can come in, do what it's supposed to do, and then leave us again on the ledge. But also we are mindful of the fact that because of the scarcity of economies in the country and all of that, and also attracting them to come to government because they command huge packages actually in companies like Stanley. Last year we had several meetings with the minister to, we're getting someone from Stanley, for example, seconded. We have a secondment from CRASA. And we've also been getting people from Telkom. Because as we are navigating this bureaucracy, there will be those frustrations that cause the delay. So to strategize around that with the minister last year, we took the liberty to go for the secondment route and make sure that we invoke, in some of these cases, 15.2 provision of the DPSA. But we can forward that full report of what we have done. But I would like to assure you that we do need those property economists, we do need those property lawyers. And if you know of anyone with those skills, it would be good that you refer also those people to us. But we must thank also the parastatals that have come on board, because we do not want to come to this portfolio committee and say there are delays and we are having problems. We just decided to go the secondment route in the meantime and make sure that we get this act. We get this function going. The time frame should have been established. We're saying to you that by 31st March, all this should be done. We can't roll it over to another financial year. On the first quarter of the financial year, we must come and report progress. Remember that there's a company that has been roped in to deal to assist us with the backlog of the business. Suffice to say, the office of the of the DG in Public Works last year, it was not the best place to be because the lease function was centralized. That means you have to sit there and work through the entire lease portfolio of the entire country because to manage the risk of corruption and everything else related to that, we did a checklist of when you approve a lease, what should be there. Just the basic minimum of compliance because when we centralized this function, we discovered that some of our regions were not adhering to the SCM prescripts of running a lease portfolio. On the issue of how many people are trained in SCM, chaplaincy and honorable members, I do have numbers in front of me, at least for some regions. We have had 21 in PE and 54 trained in Durban. Obviously, our regions have different staff complements. And also in Umtata, we had 6, Bloemfontein 13, and we'll forward the other statistics that is not available today. And the issue of one honorable member raised, what are we doing to deal with fraud in the SCM unit? Chairperson, if you recall last year again, we did make a disclosure to the committee, the minister did, around this matter. But what's important for us to note, most of the fraudulent activities discovered within the SCM unit, those cases have been dealt with, some of them, by the SIU. Yes, some of them are internal cases that I've signed so many letters. Maybe what we need to do, we just need to bring in a report, a status report focusing on this. But I do know that there's been a lot of investigations internally in the department and people receiving warning letters, et cetera, but the big cases, it was important for me that we distinguish between some of these cases and the bigger cases that were handled by the SIU. And it's not everybody who has access to that information. That is why maybe what we can do by the fourth quarter, maybe there could be a request from the committee to table a follow-up report from the previous report that we had tabled to that. But I must also stress, Chairperson, for the comfort of the honorable member, that this matter has been raised with the current National Commissioner because there's been cases opened, but we're still waiting for the response from the security, from the police, in terms of progress in that regard. On the issue of the levels in terms of the breakdown, women and all of that, the honorable member is asking a good question. We do have a breakdown of that in terms of the levels. In the department, and we can also make that available as well. The issue of the employment equity policy, the public works, because of this high turnover of people who've been there and then they left and they left, and these policies were in place. But now what has been happening over the years is there's a recognition that some of them may need review. So the EE policy is not like we are consulting on it for the first time. We're consulting for the sake of ensuring that everybody has a say on it. The retention policy has already been there. If you look at the stats, they were set. We have invoked that policy to deal with the counter offers and to make sure that we retain. It's just a review to ensure that it does meet. It continues to be a policy that responds to what is required. The HR plan, we had a discussion on this. You know, government always has these templates and formats that you have to follow, which come from DPSA. But our discussions in the department were to say we have to have an HR plan that speaks to the needs of the department. Because one of the reasons why in this mess is because our HR plan did not necessarily address what public works requires. Notwithstanding the scarcity of the skills that public works requires. Because, for example, the DG had a meeting, for example, just to illustrate this point with the National Commissioner. And informally, we're talking about the skills base in the country, that the country has an HRD plan. And while we're grappling with this issue also of skills and scarcity of these skills, there has to be a question that says, in terms of that HRD plan that the country developed, how far have we gone in the country? Notwithstanding that public works is also fully responsible for ensuring that it does respond to that plan as the custodian of the Council of Built Environment. Chairperson, the other thing that probably I forgot to mention in the presentation, we are working with DPSA to ensure that we fast-track this organizational, reconstruction. I know that we may be mentioning a lot of PDG posts, but that's where we are in terms of the turnaround. And if we want to turn things around, we've got to be realistic and say, let's not probably for now worry about the heavy top, but let's probably focus on being sensitive to that, but make sure that the organizational review will respond to what Public Works requires, at least at this point in time. The issues of misconduct, I think I've touched on that briefly, and the disputes. The issues of misconduct and obviously disputes, those are ongoing things that are happening in the department, and the appeals do go to the DG and the minister, but we can also submit the statistics around that. And I know that there must be a frustration also from honorable members about how long some of these cases take. If you recall when we had this discussion last year, the minister disclosed that the problem is we've got to be mindful that we are operating within this constitutional framework. And we have to exhaust the processes, because it's of no use to say Mandisa has stolen 10 rand, but you still can't fail to prove that Mandisa, or in charging Mandisa, we have failed to follow due process to make sure. But we're also mindful that some of these cases have been dragging because people, they use their legal rights, they change lawyers, and then these processes, they drag, and you find that these cases, they drag on while people are earning salaries, as the other honorable member mentioned.
I think Chair, there is an issue on, there are various questions that have been asked around the asset register. And I also note the sentiment of some of the honorable members about the progress that relate to that. May it not be appropriate, Chair, to park questions that relate to that, because I understand there is a presentation we're going to come and make on progress related to that. Save only to say I have seen the current progress and the plan going forward with regard to that. Because we've had the intergovernmental technical MINMEC meeting, which was preparing for a MINMEC where there were presentations that were done with regard to the progress that relates to that. I am fairly happy that there is sufficient progress to deal with some of the key issues that the AG, the key measurements that are used in terms of the standards to deal with the issues of asset registers that are in that progress report. But I think we should then deal with it when we are coming with those details, because we've now been able to categorize all the assets and have action plans with what we want to do with each of those categories. We will then be able to address it at that particular point. Thank you.
This is the bottom side, Professor. Honourable Chair and members, I think the Deputy Minister responded fairly extensively with regard to the expectations of the FLRP beyond the current design flaws in terms of short-term work opportunities. Just allow me to perhaps speak to one other issue raised, and that is the limited performance against the NYS targets. And you would just to leave, you will see the target for quarter three was once 2,500 work opportunities, rather NYS participants, and then performance against that was 1,366. The reason for that is that these learners, they have to be introduced into actual projects, and there had been a delay in the implementation of projects, hence the shortfall in terms of these targets. So the learners couldn't get exposure to actual work on projects, and that is why there's a discrepancy. And we hope, obviously, to as the year progresses, to that situation will be corrected, because we are in contact with the regional offices to ensure that the projects will be enough projects so that the invited learners can get the proper exposure as per the design for that particular plan. I think that's all I would like to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, DG and colleagues. Mine is just to provide you with the financial performance of the department for quarter three. That's the period ended 31st of December 2012. I think we should just contextualize the financial performance of the department on the basis of the following key points that one needs to consider when you assess the financial performance. I think we should take comfort in the sense in knowing that the leadership of the department has been stabilized at the top with the appointment of the DG and a whole lot of other appointments that have happened. There's been an internal realignment at senior level announced by the minister. That's about 2 weeks ago. And that was just to increase the efficiencies at the top of the structure. There's new posts being created for DDG Risk Management and DDG SEM, DDG Property Management, which is the core business of the department, which did not have a leader. I think we should also acknowledge the fact that the turnaround effects, positive effects of turnaround would not have been felt in this prior period that we're looking at because it would not have been realized because ideally, that effect we start to see the dividends from it in the year 2013, 14, and beyond. I think that would be as a consequence of the rollout of the key stabilization projects that we keep talking about to yourselves, one of which is the compilation of the movable assets register, the review of the leases, which is something that's been in the public domain for quite some time, and just generally the catch-all project that we rolled out of Audit. This is an outcome-based project that we're rolling out, the outcome of which being to achieve a clean audit based on the previous deteriorating performance of the department from an audit point of view. I think the department is clearly on a path to enhance the capacity of its technical, enhance the technical capacity of the department. As we did speak earlier on, the identification of the 220 technical vacancies that are there and the plans around filling those vacancies that Mr. Gwazube and Fachela Lindy spoke about. The performance as it stands, so I think when we look at our spend versus what we had as a budget, we've got to look at that in the context of the previous points that I made, that ideally, in terms of a linear spend, we are expected to spend somewhere in the order of about 75% of our budget for us to be, to say we on par. And in certain cases, that's not the case, and I think that's the context where I wanted to provide. I think the total portfolio of the department is about 7.9 billion rands in terms of the actual budget set, broken down into those different programs, program 1 to 5. Program 1 being generally just the administration, which is your kind of what you call project management fee of the actual department itself, which is the people that are running the department to roll out the projects that are there. If you look at it, the administration in terms of the budget, we're looking at about just somewhere north about 12.5% of the actual total budget being allocated to administration. The bulk of the budget is actually spent on the actual core of the department's business, which is on program 2, which is your renewable asset management, where somewhere in the order about 70% of the actual budget of 7.8 is being spent. The expanded program, expanded public works program, as we are the central coordinator of this program, we have a budget of 1.7. And the property and construction is a policy regulation, very small, because it's all got to do with policy conceptualization and design and drafting. Then the other is auxiliary and associated services. These are all the kind of things that we have to do in terms of state functions and that. And that's also not very material in terms of the bigger picture of the department's portfolio. a spend point of view, I'm in administration. We're looking at about 46% of our spend to date, as in up to quarter three, which is far below the 75% that we should be sitting at. If you look at the expiry of the period of the year that has gone. Under the removal asset rate management, 73% of our spend to date is 3.7 million against the 5 billion that was budgeted. The expanded public works program, we've gone over the linear 75% projection, purely because it's a transfer and it's set drawdowns that have been agreed upon. And the rest, as we can see there, in terms of the policy, we spent 55% of the budget, and we've overshot the auxiliary and associated services. Just a little few notes on those things. The expenditure of all programs, with the exception of Program 5, is in line with the guideline. If you look at it, 75 most along the lines of the guideline. The high expenditure in Program 3 is due to payments for transfer and subsidies for incentives, which are in line with the payment schedules, as I did say. These are agreed upfront as to what the drawdown is going to be from those transfers and subsidies. The overspending on Program 5, which is auxiliary and services, is due to payments relating to unplanned and unforeseen events of state, which as a responsible department to provide the infrastructure platform for those things to happen, we had to do to perform. We've started to engage the National Treasury already on this matter to try and reallocate and reprioritize our budget to ensure that we wipe off that overspend that is quite glaring in that program. Just presenting the budget in a different format in terms of the economic classification, if you look at the classifications themselves, being the compensation of employees, goods and services, office accommodation, transfers and subsidies, and the infrastructure, which is our capital projects of the department and just your normal capital assets of machinery and equipment. That comes back to the total budget allocation of 7.9. To date, our spend, again, to just present it in a different format, is about 5.6, which is about 21% of what we spend to date as benchmark against the 75 linear percentage in terms of the time that has expired in the current year. Compensation for employees is one that needs a particular attention. I think the issues around the structure of the department is the way it is and how we've populated that structure has created a situation where we have not actually made appointments in the key critical functions, but more on functions that are critical to the department. But the consequence of that is that we anticipate, as in the prior, to overspend with our compensation and employees with plus minus 3%, and which then introduces the issues around unauthorized expenditure. We are, however, in the process of reprioritizing our budget to avoid that situation from happening, and have set up certain engagements with the National Treasury to realign and reprioritize the budget to cover that gap. Under goods and services, we've gone pretty slow in terms of our spend. Office accommodation, even worse. Transfers and subsidies, gone over precisely because of the issues that that I mentioned of being above linear, because we've actually got a drawdown schedule and we've drawn faster than the time that has expired. I think more concerning is the issue around the infrastructure, which is the capital budget of the department. We've got R1 billion, R999 million, versus the expenditure of 374, which gives us the 8% of our spend to date, as opposed to 75% of the year having gone. We're looking at having huge underspend there, consistent with what's happened in the previous year periods. And I think, again, it's a consequence of the history of the department and inefficiencies that have existed, which have really called for the program of turnaround that we are unraveling now. I think just key notes to make again, the overall actual expenditures at the end of the quarter is about 5.6 billion, 71% of the allocation, which is 4% below the leaner benchmark of 75. The compensation of employees' expenditure to date at 1 billion is 28%, which is 3% above the 75% benchmark that we set from a leaner point of view. Goods and services expenditure is for 30 million, which is equivalent to about 54% of the total allocation, and office accommodation, which I've made the point, and transfers and subsidies on that. The infrastructure expenditures, I did say, is way below what we expected to be sitting at given the period. But we have actually done projections in terms of the commitments going forward up to year end, and I think there's a history to this. There's a pattern that in the last 2 months of the financial year, the spending on this class of budget. Spikes in the last 2 months of the year because people start to submit their invoices and that. So we project that we'll come under in terms of spending with an amount of 162 million rands, which we may have to reclassify and roll over to the next year. In terms of PMTE, the total revenue that was budgeted for PMTE is 7.2 billion rands for the year to date, which we've got about 5.8 or 5.9 billion that we claimed. We've actually received 4.3 billion, which gives us about 23% of what we claimed, which then talks to the issues around the strategy with respect to the collection of revenue. The expenditure on PMTE for the year is about 5.5 billion. Which gives us a deficit for the period, and if the PMTE was a fully fledged set up entity, we'd be sitting with a loss of about 1.2 billion rands, and the overdraft situation, which is again a consequence of the collection of revenue or lack thereof, is sitting about 2.9 billion rands. And, on the expenditure side of things, the budget was about 7.3, as I did say. Then we had spent about 5.5, 35% of our actual budget, which is in line with the, if you look at the time for the period. The bulk of the expenditure on PMTE is around the private leases and the rehabilitation, repair, and maintenance, both accounting for almost about 80%, 90% of the actual expenditure of PMTE. In terms of private leases, we've certainly about 35% of our budget been spent, as well as the rehabilitation repair maintenance, 87% to date up to 31st of December 2012. In terms of state-owned charges that we pay, in terms of the devolved budgets, we're supposed to be getting about 3.9 billion rands. We've invoiced 3.2 to date, which is almost along in line with the time that expired. We have collected of that amount invoiced, we've collected 2.3, which gives us 23% of what we've actually invoiced that we collected. And outstanding is around 0.9 billion rands that we still need to collect. And on the private leases themselves, we've invoiced about 1.9. We've received 1.2, 64% of what we have invoiced, and outstanding is about 0.7 billion rands. The reasons why we've got the situation, 23% of the amounts invoiced have already been received, as I did say. This represents 60% of the amount to be invoiced for the year, basically, which is actually very good. 46% of the outstanding debt relates to the accounts outstanding for more than 120 days. These are all other government departments that are not paying us, and the 46% of the 0.9 billion that I did indicate relates to about amounts that are outstanding for about 120 days. 97% of outstanding amounts in total relates to the current year, which is actually pretty encouraging as well, given the fact that we're not sitting with very old debt. The issue around this is that clients are resisting to pay because the PMTE and its normal, its usual report that we give back to the portfolio committee is not in a position to compile a detailed and itemized bill for the departments to pay. The departments do not want to pay on the basis of a claim by PMTE because the issues have been raised by the AG that the AG will then raise an audit finding on the part of those departments. So there's that standoff between the departments and PMTE. We have, however, started the process of engaging the Office of the Accountant General that it is not possible at a stage for PMTE to provide itemized detailed bills to the other government departments based on the issues of the lack of information with respect to the asset register, because the itemized detail that is required there is all information that should be contained in the asset register, and we're not in a position to do that. This is in addition to the fact that PMTE itself has not actually procured a billing and accounting system that can provide and generate these kind of invoices. But what we've requested in terms of the engagement with the Office of the Accountant General is that we requested the Office of the Accountant General to issue a circular to departments to pay on the basis of the devolved budgets, which has always been a practice. It's just that it's changed now. So that's the strategy in terms of how we're going to try and encourage or increase the revenue collection of the department. In terms of the private leases, in terms of the money that we've collected in this current year, 20% of this money of what we collected relates to the previous years. I think that's always been an issue around what happens to the old debt that's sitting there. I think we've managed to do that, to collect old debt. And of that, we've received in the current year, I mean, one thing with the private business is that we do actually manage to collect as much as we can. 64% of that we've collected. Of private leases. There's 33% of the outstanding amounts for the current financial year are less than 90 days, which means we're not really looking at a situation that requires a panic. There's 33 million, which is about 1.8 of what has not been claimed as it relates to disputed properties where the client either disputes the occupation or the rental being paid. One of the reasons why we actually have instituted a review of the leases as part of the stabilization of the department. I think that's the high level overview of the financial performance of the department. And thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mokoro. Mm-hmm. I will remember the presentation. Honorable Dreyer, Madropa, Wanyamabili.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, once again, questions just for further clarity. On slide 23, that's the first one of this particular part of the presentation, expenditure per economic classification. It's kind of worrying to see the decline in spending patterns if you compare it to the percentage spent last year as compared, the previous year 2011 to the percentage spent in 2012. So there seems to be a decline, and that's worrying. Why we want to actually see that the department is spending better. And of particular concern is office accommodation, where there's a huge decline, infrastructure, big decline, and then of course machinery and equipment. They say it's because of the history of the department, but we actually want to start seeing the results of the turnaround. That process has now been in place for a year. So if you can just comment further on that. Then I have a question relating, where can I see, or where would it fit in maintenance of properties, state-owned properties, whether it's Department of Home Affairs, say, that is using a building, or a police station or police barracks, the maintenance of these buildings, where can I see that? Because I have experience on the ground of that being a very big problem. Then I want to ask about your bad debts. Some of the 46% of the outstanding debts relates to accounts outstanding for more than 120 days. Now, clearly that's unacceptable, and you have a duty to ensure that you collect your bad debts. What do? Do you cut water and electricity? Do you give notice to the occupants that you're going to kick them out? And some buildings, you actually have illegal occupants. I've visited a few sites. and they shouldn't be there. What do you do to evict people like that, for example? That's from my side. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think my colleague has covered me, but I want to check. If you look at the infrastructure expenditure, which my colleague has raised a concern on, the expenditure, vis-a-vis the money that has been claimed, which is 77%, it's a concern. Because now there is no problem of the municipalities or those institutions that are implementing EPWT to claim. But when it comes to the actual, maybe if they can unpack this 38% expenditure vis-a-vis the 77% that has been achieved in that quarter, because it's a cause of concern. And also on the issue of the over-expenditure of 136%, I understand that on the explanation they have indicated that they are applying to the National Treasury, but I'm not sure whether you spend and then you apply later, or because we must not find that also they have over-spent, but it was not approved by Treasury, because I think the right procedure, you see the overspending coming and then you apply to the National Treasury. Maybe if they can unpack also the particular application that has been made after over expenditure, because they said it has been not, it was. So they are still requesting that over expenditure. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Followed by Madala Nguane. Program 5, Auxiliary and Associated Services. Chair, I think I will appreciate if the department can give us the breakdown of this spending so that we are clear what is it that they are talking about when they are talking about auxiliary and associated services. Because really the overspending there is just a matter for concern, because the PFMA is clear that we need to work on the allocation that we have. If there's any overspending, then it means that somehow there's a problem. Then the other one, Shay, you know the issue of the state functions that you keep on talking about, which are the one cause of the overspending on Program 5. It's a matter for concern, because really it seems as if there's no guideline that we're spending up to so much. You know, we're just spending willy-nilly. It depends on the request. If other requests are 2 million, you can spend that 2 million. 100 million, you can spend that 100 million, but there's nothing that guides us on it. If there's dysfunction, then we're spending up to this amount. I think it's a matter for concern which needs consideration by the department. The other one, Chair, I think my colleague is, you know, I'm worried that if we are underspending on infrastructure, because according to me, we're talking of, you know, high unemployment rate, while on the other side, infrastructure is one of the programs that can create jobs for the unemployed. But if we are unable to spend on infrastructure, then it means that there's a problem. As my colleague has indicated, that I think maintenance falls under infrastructure, because maintenance is one of the major challenges that we are facing, maintenance of office accommodation, you know, because in other offices, really, you can ask yourself whether this is an office or it's a barracks. So if we're failing to spend on infrastructure, then really it's just a matter for concern. The underspending again, Chair, on the issue of the infrastructure and machinery. You know, again, it's a metaphor for concern. Because you start to ask yourself, why is this understanding? Maybe also if we can just get the breakdown of, if they're talking of this machinery and equipment, what does it entail? So that we just being clear on what is it that we're expecting if a certain allocation has been allocated to the department and the department is failing to spend it. Because that is why, because the Ms. Lynn has indicated that the Treasury is reducing their budget, which is a concern. I agree with Treasury. If you're failing to spend, then it means that you don't have capacity to spend. Why should they give you more money while you're failing to spend on other projects? So they must take the money and give it to other departments. So I think that is one reason that makes the Treasury to reduce the budget, because each and every time you have to surrender some of the unspent money to Treasury because they failed to use the allocation that has been given to you. Then, Chair, I think on the issue of the collection of revenue, I think this issue of the billing system, because we have been talking about it, we hope and believe that this turnaround strategy will try to assist in resolving this problem. Because if departments, there's no contract that has been signed by the client departments with the Department of Public Works, but each and every month they are being invoiced, then the invoice is based on what? Because there should be an agreement. So if you measure for content, share, on page 28, there's this other. You know, when talking about money, when the word other comes, then you ask yourself, what is it? Because there should be accountability on every cent that the department is spending. Then if it's other, what does this other entail? Recently there was a report about the overspending on was it catering by various departments. So can it be unpacked? What does this other mean? Then I think, Chair, I will just pause there for now. But the last one, Chair, this 33 million that has not been claimed, you know, it's a matter also for concern. If there's a dispute between client departments and the Department of Public Works about the occupation, if we're not sure whether that office has been occupied, then, you know, but we're paying, what is it that we're paying for? It's a matter that needs urgent attention, Chair, because this really is just fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We can't allow these things to happen, because if the department is run as if it's a spaza shop, then it creates some problems. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Madam.
Yeah, Chairperson, partly I'm covered by Honourable Member Ngwenya Mabila, because I'm also concerned about the accommodation charges where clients are resisting to pay because of the itemized detailed bills. My question is that would mean these clients are not prepared to pay until the PMTE is reorganized. What is the real problem? Why is the department is not capable enough to do the itemized bill as it is required? Also, going back to what Ngwenya Mabila said about the 33 million, where clients are disputing or to pay the rent, is it still the same? Is it because of the PMTE still to be reorganized or what? Can you be clarified further? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've got only one question on page 24 with regard to the compensation of employees, which is above 1 billion rand and then 3% above the linear benchmark. I just want to find out, because when we were actually, when they were doing presentation, it is actually indicated that there is a high number of vacancies in the department, but here it is beyond a billion. So I just want to find out how did they actually arrive at this particular money. Thank you.
Thank you. DG, on slide 27, can you please clarify the deficit of 1.2 billion at the end of December 2012, whether it has decreased or increased, and also clarify the PMTE overdraft balance of 2.9 billion. And also on slide 28, there's no budget allocation for the municipal area services areas of 1 million. Can you please also clarify on that one? Slide 21, accommodation charges, state-owned. Clarify how many clients are not paying and what are you doing about it? We know that it's because of the billing system that we have got, but what are you doing about it? Because there's no way that we can say, because you are not, there's no itemized billing, so they shouldn't pay. Problem, how are you solving it? Because last year, you remember, in one of the meetings, you said you have got a clogged relationship, I quote what you're saying, clogged relationship with client departments. That's what you said last time, and that's why they are not paying, and you are not able to sit down, because that relationship is no longer okay. So how are you dealing with that problem? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I forgot to ask my question on page 21, but one of the other members of the committee asked, but I want to elaborate a little bit on that. That's the excessive high spending on state functions. You know, on the next page after this graph, they say that overspending in Program 5 is due to payments relating to state functions. But that's the same case every year. It's always a difficult one, but suddenly we find from the previous year it was 80%, and this year 136%. So there's a huge jump. So I ask, what's happened? Why the difference? And maybe we should look back further in the history to see if there's some sort of pattern over the years in this regard. But why is it so much higher this year than the previous year? Because it's always the same situation.
And can I follow up on that one? Which state functions contributed to the over expenditure of 13.2 million by December 2012? I'm excluding unforeseen circumstances, deaths, funerals. Can you mention which state funeral exhausted 13.2 million by December 2012? Over to you. Lesemaporo.
I think most of the questions, particularly those that require clarity and detail, Mr. Mokoro will indicate where that information is available immediately and how we can deal with it if it's not available, Chair. I think Mr. Kwazula will assist with the one or two other questions. I'm going to allocate them. But Chair, just to preface the responses, I think some of the observations that members have made are correct, because the figures are before us and they indicate what the status and the situation is with regard to both those areas that are showing underspending and those that are showing signs of overspending. But I think the main area that members have been concerned about, and Mr. Mokoro may deal with some of the details later, relate to, for example, look at Program 5, which deals with state events, including those state funerals. One, I think, critical in how we have to fix this problem is to make sure that we have a framework
that defines norms and standards for each of the services that we have to do. I think in a number of cases we have discovered that those norms and standards are not there, and they need to be put in place and developed, and then we have to then deal with that going forward. And we are going to have to deal with it in the 2013-14 financial year, because they affect the extent to which we do. The second issue is I think the budgeting is not quite accurate. Not quite accurate because I think we probably did not give ourselves sufficient time to deal with the issue of dealing with budgeting for unforeseen events. Close to saying even unforeseen. The explanations that were given to me relate to some of the things that probably contingency budgeting says. If you know you have a certain experience with regard to certain things, you must provide and make sufficient provisions for those things. Now, in the absence, one, the fact that you did not know, you wouldn't know how many funerals you're going to have in any 1 year, probably. And there were
so two or three
high-level funerals in the year.
What is the high level?
Those that are declared by the president as certain categories of state funerals. Yeah, during the year that passed. This is 2012, 13.
I'm sorry, DG.
Sorry?
I'm sorry about my interjection.
Yes.
Is it not because there's no policy?
Yes, I'm saying, I have said that the issue is there is no policy, there's no framework that deals with norms and standards that relate to those things. And they can then end up varying. That's one aspect, that's a differential that is caused by price. But the other one is the fact that we don't make provision for them at all in the budget that you would have heard of 38. There would not have been any provision for that. I think that those are the things we will have to deal with in terms of using proper budgeting standards for dealing with contingencies. I have indicated to the team that we have to talk to Treasury and look at section 12, where you're dealing with issues of unforeseen emergencies, etc., whether we cannot frame something along those lines so that there is a small contingent funding that is there, but it must be based on a predictable norms and standards, so that if that event occurs, you know that it's 6 million, it's not 13 or 12 or whatever the demands may be that relate to a particular requirement. And I think that's where the big problem is, largely. It's to develop that policy framework that deals with the norms and standards. But that's not applicable only to this. You may find that even in the prestige portfolio, lack of norms and standards can create variances between various categories of allocations. And that can only be defeated or reversed by developing norms and standards that set the standards and the price that relate to that, which can then be escalated on an ongoing basis to accommodate inflation and price changes. I think I'm prefacing that discussion on that because it's a serious policy deficiency that we need to address as a department.
In prestige, DG, there's a middleman. If we can deal with the issue of the middleman that we use for buying furniture, this problem will be solved. Can we deal with the issue of the middleman? She knows what I'm talking about.
Yes, that too.
I agree on the policy, but we also need to deal with the issue of this middleman.
Okay, thank you. Then Mr. Mohoro will then deal with the other issues.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and answer as most as I can, and where we don't have the detail in terms of the breakdowns of what was required, we will then send that to the committee members. I think the first question from Ms. Dreya was issue around the decline in the spending pattern. If you look at this overall picture, overall the spending pattern hasn't actually declined, it has increased. If you look at the bottom number of 6.1% as of the 31st of December 2012 comparative period last year, it was at 68%. I think the individual items where the spending pattern seems to be declining. It's around goods and services. It's around office accommodation, which is a major one. I think we've actually instituted a request from internally to look at the specific one, to understanding why we're not actually spending money there. And I think we'll get the results of that review. And I think through our own acknowledgement as well, the infrastructure budget and the machinery and equipment, and the question was made, what was it that you allocated money for that you wanted to buy that you did not manage to buy under machinery and equipment? And I think that kind of information we'll try and compile it for purposes of the committee. I think the infrastructure, there's a detail of the projects where the spending on of infrastructure projects that we have that we are rolling out. And I could walk the committee through a detail of that of the projects themselves, individual projects, to determine where the actual spending is happening and it's not happening. And I think that is also one of those that we can package for purposes of the committee to have a look at, and then we can discuss and have a look at our next session. I think that's in order. I'm not going to comment on the Program 5 issues. I think the DG has provided adequate info on that. There was a question on the collection of revenue to say the 33 million, does it also relate to that? I think that's true. It does relate to that. We have not collected the revenue precisely because the 33 million was all about matters the client were disputing, and I think it is matters of concern, and hence we've actually engaged this intervention to review the leases to ensure that our lease contracts are in line, and in addition to that to ensure that the occupancy of those buildings actually has happened, and I think we'll have a report out of that as well. I think the issue around why don't we have the billing system yet when turnaround has been happening throughout the year. I think, like I said, I mean, you know, for the better part of the year, we've just been engaging SEM processes to get things in order for turnaround. And like I said, most of these have now started to happen, and I think the results of turnaround we'll start to see next year. In terms of the actual billing system, which is an IT software, we've started the procurement for the software for PMTE so that we can be able to produce the necessary detailed bills. I think in the new year, very early in the new year, we are going to be in a position to produce the detailed bills for the client departments. The issue around compensation of employees being over budget to 3% versus the vacancies that we had reported on. I think, again, that's what you said. You know, the vacancies that we're talking about is the vacancies that are critical to the department, whereas we've actually made appointments of positions that were not critical, and hence overshooting our budget in terms of compensation. I think the analysis that we've started to put together jointly as finance and HR to look at the actual HR and the personal information to try and see the alignment and where the issues are will provide invaluable information for us to look at what corrective measures are. Over and above that, the department is undertaking, will start to undertake an organization functional analysis process, which will then start to align the structure properly with the people that are being populated appropriately. The deficit is as at the 31st of December. What we look into is to actually break even come year end, and I believe we will break even come year end because of the as we go on. This is a number that carries on basically, and the bank overdraft is a consequence of not being able to collect the money. As soon as we can collect the money, we can reduce the bank overdraft, and I think that's what we're going to see happening as soon as we can get the billing system, or as soon as we can get this director from National Treasury requesting departments to pay on the basis of the devolved budget. Before, this never used to be a problem because the budgets were with public works fund, but now that the budgets have gone back to the departments, we have to claim for them. We have now a situation where our bank overdraft will continue to grow if we don't collect the money. I think we'll provide the details of which departments are not paying, and in the question about what are we doing, we are actually engaging them in terms of, you know, trying to go through the detail or work out the, you know, how the amounts have been arrived at. And so our people have continuous consultations and meetings with these departments to try and, you know, assist in terms of them paying. So there's a bit of there's some intervention in that regard as well. But again, the bulk of it is dependent on the decision that National Treasury can take to say they have to pay.
It's the ones who don't have contracts with them.
That is a contributor, major one as well. I think that's the rest of the questions.
The state functions, which state functions contribute to the over expenditure of 13.2 million by December 2012.
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll submit the details at the later stage on what actually cost, but the bulk of it is all ad hoc events that cost it. We will present you with the details.
If you remember, in one of the meetings, we did raise the issue of state functions, and DG said you were going to investigate where I said you are hiring classes at 100 and something rand per class. 100 and something rand per class. And you are also hiring serviettes. Tablecloth at a higher price. A tablecloth is hired for 400-500 rands. And you said, DJ, you'll come back to us to come and give us an answer on that one, to say, how are you going to deal with it? And also the issue of, we're rounding up this meeting, the issue of funerals, where families just demand, we want this type of flowers, we want this type of decorations, we want this type of choice. How are we going to deal with that problem? Because if we allow families just to demand anything that they want, we are not going to deal with the issue. Here's disclaimer. If we continue paying rent for clients' department, we'll not be able to deal with the issue of disclaimer. If we don't deal with the issue of middlemen, the issue of disclaimer will always be there. Those are few issues that we need to deal with, DG. If you want to succeed in public works, let's face it and deal with this problem. And be straightforward. When Yamabila will be followed by Dreyer.
Chairperson, I think it will be proper for us to request the information with regards to the renovation and maintenance of the minister's houses so that we understand this matter properly, because around December, I think it was around December or early January, it was just, confusion. Other ministers were blamed that their houses have been renovated at such cost. Can we just get an information, a detailed report on the processes that are being followed when a house is being renovated or maintained? I think that HR, which has been requested to sort out that issue of appointing people with lack of skills, is the one that has put us in this deep sea. Because if you just ask yourself, how can you appoint the skills that the department does not really need, which has results to this over expenditure? Now the same HR has been given the responsibility to intervene and assist.
the ones who have caused these problems, do you trust them that they are going to really assist you to solve this problem? Because they are the ones that are supposed to be charged. But again, you have given them the responsibility that they must assist in this mess which they have created. So, Chairperson, I think this matter of overspending on the compensation of employees is a serious matter. Why we've got the high rate of vacancies without the department and the high number of people within the department who are getting paid every month, but they can't assist the department to execute its mandate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Andrea.
Yeah, thank you for the second opportunity, Madam Chair. My question about maintenance of properties has not been answered or satisfactorily answered. And I want to give you an example to show what I mean. I've recently been invited by a councillor in Durban to go and investigate, and I'll give you the details. It's Excelsior Court Barracks, Police Barracks. It belongs to the Department of Public Works. The building is in a disgusting condition, so much so that the policemen and women who used to live there have actually moved out. They said it was no longer fit for human consumption. But then the building was empty, so other people, illegal kind of occupants, moved in, and it's mainly criminals, drug lords and prostitutes and so on. And they live very well there. They live free of charge, obviously. They don't pay a rent. And the whole building, you see just lots of dishes, satellite dishes. They've put up satellite dishes there. And the department is paid up. It's up to date with these municipal rates and taxes with this particular building. So the building is not being renovated. It's been declared unfit for human habitation. It's now been illegally occupied by others, and the department goes on to pay the municipal rates, and the building is not being maintained or not being renovated. So if it continues deteriorating, eventually we'll have to kind of just scrap the whole building. And that's one example. There are lots of others that I've visited, and I don't want to take the time of the committee by going into other examples, but this one explains my point of what I want to know about maintenance of buildings and what you do about illegal occupants.
Thank you, Honorable Dre. There are a lot of issues that were raised with the department. For instance, Ubaba Maguvani raised an issue of a building that is being paid for in Durban but not utilized. If you remember, we said we must get a report of what is happening. I don't remember, so we done? DG, can I see the honorary acting DG goes back to her diary and check all the issues that we raised for her to come back to us and respond to. If when it's cutting, she must come back and give us a report on paper and also verbally so that we can be able to engage. I think we have come to the end of our meeting. DG, do you have anything to say?
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, I didn't want to respond generically to some of the questions raised, but they reflect on the extent to which the department has, and I think addressed through the turnaround strategy, is seeking to deal with the causes of these things. And some of them are related to property management. The lack of collection of debt means is as a result of having an improper property management arrangement that starts from how you deal with the client relationships as well as the billing processes, etc., etc. The whole thing that you would do in the private sector under your client satisfaction issues. I think what the restructuring exercise doing, the turnaround strategy is doing, is that it identifies the need for those skills, including in areas of maintenance. Without the professionals, we would depend on the third parties to do that, which is the middleman that you're talking about, Chair, and some of the issues then as a consequence of that arrangement. If then you engage the middleman and you yourself do not have the skills to engage that middleman, and to know whether you are being overcharged, you are being abused in the process, then you are not going to be able to get value for money in the process. And I think without loading everything to the turnaround strategy, it certainly seeks to address those things. And I think over time, Chere, if we continue to be consistently on top of the issues, we will be able to address them. I think the outstanding information that we have promised, we will compile and provide the committee. Soon, I would think that we should have that within the next 2 weeks, Chair, so that then the committee can engage on those issues. I had indicated that there is a particular area that we didn't address because we think we will be coming to specific and address it comprehensively next week. In that regard, I think most of the issues the committee is concerned about will be able to address it. I thank you, Chair, for giving me the opportunity to engage with the committee. We commit ourselves to dealing with the issues that are of concern to the committee.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we have come to the end of our meeting. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. On so cold, but...